Get ready, get comfy for the next Nonprofit Insider Podcast episode.
All right, my insiders, we're back with another episode of the Nonprofit Insider Podcast. We're wrapping up 2025. And when you have heavy hitters like we do today, a lot of times they really don't need any introduction. And you might even be listening to this episode simply because she's on the podcast. So listen, be sure to follow us on Instagram, TikTok. We've got YouTube Shorts. Go over there. You can see us in the show notes. So we're kind of rocking and rolling over there. And I promise in 2026, we're going to get into videos. But for now, we're sticking with the audio. I have a mega guest in Faza Vinzant. Faza, how are you doing?
Hey, Swim. I'm doing great today. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast. And that was quite an introduction. I am going to maybe have you like come and like hype me up with my kids who don't think I'm a big deal at all. So thank you for that.
It's just the circle of life, because I'm sure to one degree or another, when we were with our parents, they were always like, they're just not as cool or as exciting, but we're excited to have you here on the Nonprofit Insider Podcast. Faza, you've been the executive director of the Council for Certification and Volunteer Administration for 5+ years now. So, I mean, you have a Rolodex of contacts that's, I mean, it's longer than the Amazon River, longer than the Nile. So I want to start with this for our audience. I want to get straight into it. From your view of the sector, what is the state of nonprofits in Canada and the United States right now? What's going on?
I mean, what's going on is what's been going on for decades. So I'm in my 26th year managing volunteers, and things ebb and flow. We have times where nonprofits are at the forefront. They have a ton of public support. They have a ton of political support. They have a ton of citizen support. And then we have times where that wanes. It ebbs and it flows. And this is not unique to nonprofits. This is what our public school systems experience, those ebbs and flows, you know, our corporate partners experience this as well. There's nothing unique about those ebbs and flows. But I will say, despite that, as a Canadian who now lives in the United States, I've lived here for the last 4 years, 2025 has been a particularly challenging year for American nonprofits. Probably one of the most challenging years since the pandemic, which was a challenging year for everyone all over the place. And so, yeah, 2025 has been a particularly challenging year. And what I've seen come out of that is innovation, is strength, is a lot of courage, and is an increase in dialogue amongst, and I'm talking about ourselves, amongst leaders of volunteers and within our profession. And I don't think, again, that that's unique to us. I think when times are tough, we find each other. And we saw that, and I'll mention COVID, the time of COVID again. Like, we saw the rise of mutual aid. We saw the rise of public voice and protest during that time as well, because when times are tough, people will find each other. And so I'm finding that is happening again now in 2025.
Well, wait a minute. I got to dig a little deeper here, Faza. That was a good answer. But do you like what you see? I mean, because you're in a position, obviously, you're connecting with people on such a large scale. Mm-hmm. Do you like what you see in the nonprofit space right now?
I like some things, and there's some things that I don't like. And so let's start with what I don't like. What I don't like are nonprofits that have and espouse values, but are living in a time of fear right now where they're not able to animate those values, right? And there are some nonprofits that are sitting by quietly, right, and who are not living up to their values, especially when it comes to values rooted in equity, because they are scared of the government right now. And that's happening. That's a very real thing that's happening, that is not only affecting the work that a nonprofit is able to do, that is also affecting the community that they exist to serve, that is affecting nonprofit employees as well. It can't feel good to work within a nonprofit and know that they're not living up the values that they say that they are. So I don't like that. I don't like that at all. I don't like the state of fear that some people are finding themselves in. And I have to question leaders of those nonprofits, where does that fear come from? And in my experience, without naming names or, you know, taking anyone down, leaders who live with privilege, to me, are the ones that are exhibiting the fear. Leaders who don't live with that privilege are the ones who are stepping up, who are once again having to bear the burden of being a voice for everybody. So I don't like that. That's the stuff that I don't like and that I'm definitely seeing. What do I like? I do love and I do like that we are in an era where it's easier for us to communicate. It's easier for us to get together. I love that you're in Pennsylvania and that I'm in California and we can have this conversation, right? So I love that technology makes it easy for us to communicate and to talk and to exchange information. I love that not-for-profits are getting braver and bolder and are curious about things like AI. They're doubling down and they're investing when they're not operating out of fear in their community, involving their community more, which should have been the way that, you know, which are ways the not-for-profits should be operating to begin with. So those are the things that I like as well. I'll also say, from my position as executive director with the Council for Certification and Volunteer Administration, when times are tough, we do well. Business is good for us. Certifications, applications go up. Certifications go up. And we saw that in COVID. We're seeing that again in 2025. I don't know what that's about, to be honest. I don't know if that's because people have more downtime, so they're repurposing the time that they have. I don't know if people are unhappy with what's happening the same way that I am. And so they are getting ready to make a move. And that's something that I think nonprofit leaders need to pay attention to. If you're not going to be willing to stand behind the values that you paint on your walls, put on your business cards, you know, talk about with your donors, you're going to lose some of the best resources you have, which are your nonprofit employees and the volunteers that support your nonprofits as well.
Yeah, this is why we love having you on the podcast today. Again, join with Positive Mizan, Executive Director of the Council for Certification and Volunteer Administration. And I appreciate that insight because, you know, there are moments where, same thing, I like what I see, but I don't like what I see. Mm-hmm. And I think you really did touch on something of living in fear and not holding on to your values. When the world around you is shaken, what are the values that we really hold? And we can all be tested in those moments, but you really put a great bow on that explanation. We just had Dana Litwin on the episode before you. You know, you're familiar with Dana, and she was talking about how nonprofits, and she made sure to say this twice, nonprofits, you cannot comply in advance. And I think it was kind of like not complying in that political sense or that administration sense, but not complying in terms of other ways, such as your value. So the fact that you really hit on that, it just goes to show the type of leadership that you bring to the organization.
Yeah. And I want to talk about that fear piece as well, because I'm not immune to it, right? I mentioned earlier on, so I'm Canadian and I moved to the US 4 years ago. I only got my US citizenship of April of this year. So,
oh, snap. No way.
So let me share with you, like in January of 2025, when that executive order came out, I was steep in the executive order around diversity, equity, and inclusion, right? When that came out, I was just towards the beginning of the third year of an AmeriCorps research grant on a project called Assessing Diversity and Equity in Volunteer Inclusion. And, you know, I had flights booked to go speak at conferences about equity and diversity. And I had a Canadian passport at the time. And I was nearing the end of my U.S. citizenship process. So I'm also someone that was living in that fear and was watching what I was saying. You know, I wasn't being as vocal as I feel confident in doing now, because I also was living in that fear. But I will say that I did not let that affect my leadership and my role at CCVA. And I didn't let that stop the work that we were doing. We took a pause when we were instructed to take a pause, but we just kept going with that work as well. And I think that's different from when I'm talking about that systemic and institutional leadership fear that we're seeing, where we're seeing nonprofits who should be at the forefront and who should be advocating for their communities, taking a step back, taking a pause, and doing exactly what Dana was touching on, right? Trying to comply in advance. And what does that even mean, right? Like when you cower that way and you comply in advance, what are you saying to the community that you only exist to serve, really?
Yeah, we don't all. Yeah. And I think that we have to give ourselves grace because we don't always have the answer. And again, I appreciate honesty because same way, right? There are a lot of people who January 2025 who didn't know up from down, left from right, and weren't sure what to say or the ramifications of the words that they speak. And we know with individuals such as yourself, I mean, your words carry a lot of weight. And it's so funny. We talk about that state of the non-profit space right now for the United States and Canada. And you said there are more CVA applications during downtimes. And I got to ask, do you feel like everyone is getting laid off right now, or is it just me? Because I keep seeing hashtag open to work on people's LinkedIn pages. It's kind of driving me crazy. I mean, people we both know in the industry, some with the CVA next to their names, they're employed today, and then they're let go tomorrow. What is happening there?
I don't necessarily feel like there's like an upswing, to be honest. I feel as though people's ability, like people's honesty around being open to work, people's vulnerability in disclosing that they've been let go, I think is also a reaction to the fact. I mean, one thing that I'll say is, one thing that I've learned in the last few years working on that Adevi project is that even though there are a majority of nonprofit employees who swing more to the left, for lack of a better word, there are still quite a few who swing to the right when it comes to like political ideology, right?
It's true.
And I do think that right now people are being outspoken about what is happening in federal politics, and that does give them a little bit more. I'm trying to think about how to say it. I think talking about getting laid off, talking about losing your job, talking about losing your funding is also a reaction to talking about and expressing your opinion about what's happening politically as well. So do I think more people are getting laid off? Nope. Do I think more people are talking about it? Yes. Is it disheartening to see? Absolutely. But I'm also, I do a job posting every week for CCVA where I'm posting between 40 and 100 positions that I see on a weekly basis. I'm not seeing those numbers go down in terms of the positions that are available. I definitely am not seeing those numbers go down. So I think I would agree with the statement, is everybody getting laid off? If I was seeing everybody getting laid off and no positions, no vacant positions open, but I'm not seeing the both of them at the same time.
Ooh, this is high level. You've given us, I mean, you're giving us some really great perspective. You said something in the beginning. You said you're 26 years in this particular space. And I'm sitting here thinking, yeah, you definitely are bringing some really great perspective here. For that job posting, that job thing, do you have to be a CVA to see that, or is it public?
That's public. So if you go on LinkedIn, LinkedIn, follow Council for Certification and Volunteer Administration. And I usually try to do that every Wednesday. So on Wednesdays, I will, there's a post on there, you know, which is all about finding your next job. I will post a whole bunch of jobs that I'm aware of. And anyone is welcome to add to that thread. So anyone out there who is hiring, add to that thread. And if you're looking for work, look at that thread. And you know what? Look at them just to see. And something I wanted to talk to you about today, Swim, is around our profession and how strategic we are and how strategic we need to be, right? Even if you're not looking for work or if you are looking for work, look at those 100 postings that I'm sometimes posting in a week. And try to find some trends, try to find some similarities between what positions are called, because they're not all called the same thing. That will help you with your job search. Look for trends in terms of experience. What are people looking for? I post everything from entry-level jobs to executive director, VP roles as well, and start to look at those. Look at what people are actually asking for. Kind of breaks my heart when I see people in our field with 20 and 25 years of experience still applying for the volunteer coordinator role. If you're a CVA and you've demonstrated that competency around strategy, you should be looking at an executive director role. You should be looking at those leadership roles. You have what it takes to do that. You have the experience that it takes to do that. And I want to see more CVAs moving into those senior roles, especially with the competencies that we have to demonstrate in order to get our CVA and maintain our CVA.
Yeah, I want to talk about getting your credentials as a CVA through the CCVA. We're going to talk about that here in a little bit. I want to do a commercial break here in a couple of minutes, but I want to ask you a question point blank. I want to tease that here for a second, Faz. I want to ask you a question point blank. Does the nonprofit space truly respect and value the work of volunteer administrators in Canada and U.S., or volunteer managers and leaders being disregarded?
I'm going to say I've had experiences where I feel like the role of volunteer engagement is deeply respected. And then I've had experiences, where it's not. And I would say that in those organizations where I've had the experience where it's not just the role of the volunteer engagement professional that's not respected. It's the HR culture in general isn't a supportive one, and isn't a nurturing one. So I do think it's not necessarily about the profession not being respected. It is about volunteerism in general being really misunderstood. And for example, I'm going to talk about our colleagues who do programming, who do fundraising, right? So we're working in a not-for-profit. We have colleagues who do programming. If that programming is strong, if it is leading to amazing community impacts and you're able to communicate those, that'll show up. That will rise to the top in those organizations. If fundraising is strong, if you're bringing in dollars, if you have influential donors in your community who not only bring with them their social capital, right? They're also bringing in their political capital, those kinds of things as well. That's what will rise. That's what will come to the top. We as leaders of volunteers have all the skills, especially if you're someone that's achieved your CVA. There's no doubt that you have the competencies and the skills to do the same thing. What I find in our profession, and I don't know where it comes from, is there are a lot of us who are waiting to be asked questions, and there are a lot of us who are waiting for the permission to tell our stories. There's some great CVAs. Jessica Pang Parks comes to mind for me. I know she's been a guest on the podcast, who's doing some great work around the impact of storytelling in our roles. I think as CVAs and as leaders of volunteers, you know, if we want to stay relevant, we need to start building our toolbox around how do we tell stories, right? How do we communicate impact? If we want to be valued, then we need to bring something to the table. We need to talk about what we do. We can't keep saying we don't have a seat at the table. We can't keep saying we're underappreciated. Nobody wants to hear that. Come to the table with your stories, with your victories. The other thing we need to do, I mentioned this as many times as I can to as many people who has listened. My colleague Jennifer Bennett at Idealist talks about terminal uniqueness, right? And that's something that I think our profession does suffer from. I agree with Jennifer when she says that. We are unique in some of the competencies that we have, but we're not unique when it comes to feeling underappreciated and undervalued, right? You know, I have colleagues in the accounting department at a previous organization that I worked for that felt the same way, right? People in the IT department that felt the same way. Nobody appreciates what we do. We need to drop that. Like, we need to drop that rhetoric, and we need to start showing and talking about and demonstrating what we do with a sense of pride, with a sense of victory. Go get your CVA, right? Show that there's a credential out there. Celebrate International Volunteer Managers Day. Promote what it is that we do in our profession. No one's going to do it for us, right? We don't need the permission to do that. It's us that needs to do that. We can't wait for other people to come and sing our praises. And there's nothing wrong with tooting our own horns. There's nothing wrong with that. We're so good at doing that for volunteers. It's a competency, recognizing volunteers. It's a competency that we have. Why can't we do it for ourselves?
Absolutely. You are hearing it here on a Nonprofit Insider podcast. Listen, I want to take a quick pause. I want to come back because I want to talk about getting your credentials so that you can put that CVA next to your name. I have it next to my name, and I took the test twice. I failed the first time. So we're going to talk about that when we come back.
Yeah.
Hang tight, everyone.
Hey, it's Jessica Pangparks from learnwithjpp.com. Did you catch my conversation with Swim on the Nonprofit Insider podcast a few weeks ago? Check it out now to learn my insights as a volunteer engagement thought leader. As the principal consultant at Learn with JPP, I work with nonprofits who give a care to build trust, create impact, and inspire belonging through ethical volunteer engagement frameworks. Want to jumpstart or grow your volunteer engagement journey? Right now, I'm offering Nonprofit Insider listeners 10% off of my one-on-one coaching sessions. Go to learnwithjpp.com/coaching. That's learnwithjpp.com/coaching and enter Insider Pod at checkout. That's Insider Pod, all one word, on learnwithjpp.com/coaching. This offer applies to the first 5 people who use the code Insider Pod. I'm here to help you solve that urgent challenge you're facing around board member engagement, grow professionally as a leader of volunteers, or realign processes with your organizational values. Go to learnwithjpp.com/coaching and enter Insider Pod, all one word, to claim this exclusive offer.
All right, welcome back. Hope you are having a good day listening to this podcast, whether you're walking, jogging, you're on the treadmill, maybe you're getting ready to go to bed and you listen to us, whatever the case, we're glad to have you here on a Nonprofit Insider podcast. Once again, I'm joined with Faza Van Zandt, the Executive Director of the Council for Certification and Volunteer Administration. We have that in the show notes. Go check that out. This is someone you are definitely going to want to know. First, let me ask you a question, because I want to learn a little bit more about you, because I think there are a lot of people listening that go, gosh, I feel like I need to follow her. But before I get into that, tell us a little bit about the CCVA and the CVA. Break it down for our audience so we know what we're talking about here.
Sure. Okay. So CCVA stands for the Council for Certification in Volunteer Administration. We do two things. And we do them well. So the first thing that we do is we administer the CVA, which stands for the Certified in Volunteer Administration Credential. And Swim, thanks for being so vulnerable and sharing that you didn't pass your CVA the first time, but then you did it the second time.
I missed it by like 6 questions. So, and
good,
I did, one
yeah.
of them I didn't even answer. I missed it. So I like to say I missed it by 5.
But listen, you took it. And there are so many people out there who are like, yeah, yeah, I'm thinking about it. Yeah, yeah, you did it. And so you did what a lot of people don't do, which is at least you tried and then you tried again. And so if there's anyone out there that's listening, one of the ways we can profile and highlight our profession is to come with our credential in hand, and to talk about it and to strive for it, to achieve for it, to grow this community globally. The more of us that there are, the more attention to it, the more we can advocate for what we do and the unique competencies that we bring. So don't hesitate. Think about it. Attend an information session and start the process today. So at CCVA, we administer the CVA credential. Once you have your CVA, you renew it every 5 years. And the other thing that we do is we promote the professional ethics in volunteer administration. So like most professions that have a code of ethics, so do we, right? That because we really stand by what we do, and because we are relational in the work that we do, working with people, that code of ethics is so important as well. So those are the two things that we do. And our credential is held by over 1,200 individuals around the world.
Just had another, as of October 21st, like another 66 or something?
Absolutely, yeah. We've had 66 new CVAs in October and 136 in 2025. Yep.
I do want to ask a little bit about this code of ethics. It's funny, I have a 10-year-old. We were talking before the podcast episode happened about children. And it's funny with my, well, he's soon to be 10, regardless.
Yeah.
We've been doing this thing, Faza, called philosophy questions. So at night, we ask him, we have a little printout, and we give him one philosophy question. And it
Yeah.
could be questions like, what's the difference between right and wrong? Or questions like, do animals have the same rights as humans? We just did the trolley problem not long ago. So ethics is an interesting thing right now in my household. Talk to me a little bit more about the ethics piece, because I don't think people, when they think volunteering, they can immediately think of ethics, but it is a
Yeah.
big piece of the equation, right?
It's a huge piece of the equation, and it's one of the defining characteristics of a profession, right? Is to have a code of ethics that you think about. So when we think about ethics and how that intersects with volunteer engagement, think about all the different people that we work with and for. So the communities that we work on behalf of, and the community that we invite and that we encourage to help us to do that work, right? Something that I think all of us need to be aware of, right, is that if we are living the values of our organization, that means that we exist and we are there to serve volunteers who may not vote like we do, who may not pray the way that we do, who may not have the same stance on political issues that we do. It doesn't matter, right? Our organization, for example, if we are dealing with food security, those are not prerequisites to having to access service in our organizations, and those are not prerequisites to wanting to serve within the organization. And so that's where ethics come into play, right? Is that you are working within communities where individuals have multiple identities, right? And we work, not only do individuals that serve have multiple identities, individuals who work in those organizations and individuals who have to access those resources have multiple identities. And so our ethics come into play when there's five core values for our ethics, when two or more of them are at conflict. So we talk about this in depth. If anyone is interested in geeking out about ethics like I do, we offer free webinars for anyone. You don't have to be a CVA. You could just be interested in this. Go to CVACERT.org/ethics, and you can attend one of our ethics webinars. We have different case studies that we walk people through, where we talk about those values and we work through problems together, as individuals. That all being said, ethics are not right and wrong. Ethics are not two opposites. When you're presented with an ethical dilemma, swim, and I'm presented with an ethical dilemma, we may have two different ways of approaching them, and both are right. And I think we are increasingly living in this world where we can't have two rights. We can only have one right and one wrong. And that divisiveness is just becoming more and more and more amplified, and we are less and less. I mean, in my experience, I feel as though we are moving away from having dual experiences to saying that there's only one right way to do things. And I think that ethics helps us to think about that.
Now we're talking about things that extend beyond CVAs, things that extend beyond the nonprofit space as a whole, right? Trying to be a little bit more holistic as it relates to how do we approach community and
Absolutely.
asking some of
And
those
that's
questions.
what we should be doing, because we're not our own little thing. We exist within a larger community, and we have to acknowledge that without the community, there'd be no use for us. Like, I would love to work myself out of a job and not have to do this, because we'd know how to instinctively just take care of each other, right? If non-for-profits did not exist and we just knew how to take care of each other and we just saw the humanity in each other, we wouldn't have the need for not-for-profits to begin with, right? So we are working within it and then against it at the same time.
Well, and it is one of those things, right? We do have this divide. It can kind of feel like a lot of it's online. When I go outside and I walk around, I don't feel that as much compared to
100%.
when I'm online. But it is what it is, right? You and I, like you said, we're talking. You're in California, I'm in Pennsylvania, so we have so much that we do online. And before we even hop on the podcast, you were talking about the Everyone is Welcome toolkit. And I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, I want to give a shout out to Nicole Smith, president or executive director at Alive, because when I listened to her podcast in April, I think she mentioned this.
Good. Yeah, she has
It's coming
some.
full circle. Tell us about this thing. I'm gonna put that in the show notes. So what is this everyone is welcome toolkit.
Yeah. So 3 years ago, myself, my colleagues Mark Hager and Teresa Oswald, we and through AmeriCorps, Arizona State University, and CCVA, and numerous other names, but I want to get to the meat of what it is. We had a 3-year AmeriCorps research grant, and we called it Assessing Diversity and Equity in Volunteer Inclusion. We talked about the principle that organizations that are attuned to inclusiveness will be able to recruit from a more diverse base within their community, right? So organizations that acknowledge that diversity is a strength, and diversity, and welcoming and inclusivity and equity, are all strengths and levers that can be activated within an organization, will be able to recruit from a more diverse base of the community. So we did a whole bunch of research. We talked to CVAs. We had almost 60% of CVAs respond to a survey where we asked about their demographics. We asked about their organization's equity journeys. We did 21 focus groups with CVAs as well. We were asking them about volunteerism and equity and that intersection. What came out of that is what's called the Is Everyone Welcome Toolkit. You can find it for free on the Idealist website. About 20 CVAs came together, worked together, and created over 20 free tools that are basically for the volunteer engagement leader that is looking to apply an equity lens to their work. So if you think about all of the competencies that we have, if you think about the nuts and bolts of what we do as leaders of volunteers, take a step back and apply a lens of equity and welcome to it. There are a whole bunch of tools in there that you can access. For example, a guide to inclusive volunteer position descriptions, a defining retention worksheet. There's a train the trainer video on that toolkit around the identity signs exercise, which challenges people to think about their bias and their privilege. So there's a whole bunch of tools in that toolkit. And if you're interested in making sure that everyone feels welcome in the invitation to volunteer, and not just the people that traditionally volunteer, or not just the people that have access to disposable income, free time, or who have grown up with a traditional sense of volunteerism, in a way that not, how not-for-profits structure volunteerism. I'm thinking about the people who have lived experience, incredible, rich skills, but don't see themselves in the invitation to volunteer. How do you reach those people? And these tools were all developed for us as leaders of volunteers to start thinking about how we reach the people that we haven't been able to reach so far.
Okay, once, yes, I've heard you talk about this word. I'm going to put that in the show notes. I'm going to link that up so people can know exactly where to find that. There are some really, really good resources. I don't know if I want to ask you this, Faza, or not. I might not get you again. I got to ask. We got a bunch of other questions we got to ask.
I'm happy to come back anytime soon. I so respect what you're doing here, and I love listening to your podcast. The conversations are so great. So please, I'm here. Ask me whatever you want to ask me.
We got to bring you back. Yeah, I want to ask this because, again, there are people that are listening to this podcast, and we have a sense of the world that's around us. But it is nice getting perspective from people that we like, we trust, who put themselves in the community like you do. The fact that you were doing this study, you've done the research, you put in so much of the time, and that's why I think people turn to you. And I got to ask, is DEI dead? Is DEI no longer a thing?
You
Is
know
it
what?
what's going on?
The words DE, like the words diversity, equity, inclusion are just words. Like they're just words that we use to say we want people to feel welcome, right? Whatever we call it, the words are going to change, right? So we used to call it affirmative action. We used to call it a mosaic versus a melting pot. Like, what's the better way to do things? Now we use DEI, or we use ABAR, or we use JEDI, or we use IDEA. None of it matters to me. It's just words that we use. What is not dead and what will never die, and the movements and the divisiveness that we see right now is all an attempt to separate us and to keep pointing out what makes us different. But what won't die is that I don't care how you vote. I don't care. If I have something that I can do that is going to help you, it is in my nature that I'm going to do that, right? I don't care if you're Islamophobic and I'm Muslim. I don't care if you voted in a different way than me. If I have food and you're hungry and I can help you in this moment, what I care about is that you're human and there's a humanity in you and a humanity in me that connects us. What I care more about is, are there conversations that we can have where I can change your perspective or learn a little bit more about you? Is that called DEI? I don't know. What I care about is, what experiences have you had in your life that make you think the way that you do? What experiences have I had and am I going to continue in my life that make me think the way that we do? And how do we get closer together? I'm not interested in being angry. I'm not interested in hating. I'm really more interested in, like, what is the humanity in you that connects us together? And that's why I said earlier on, you know, who you vote for and what your thoughts are. Are you pro-life? Are you pro-choice? Those are not prerequisites to caring about community. Those are not prerequisites. Those are not things we ask on a volunteer application form. We can disagree on things. We can have two different truths. We can't use those as a way to stop seeing each other as human. And I'm seeing way too much of that. I see a lot of, how can I distance myself from you? How can I cancel you out? How can I silence your voice? I'm not interested in that. I actually want to know why we think differently. I actually want to know what it is about me that scares you if I'm Muslim or if I'm a woman of color. What are the things that you've been taught? What are the things that I've been taught to maybe be fearful of you? And why is that happening? I'm more curious about those things. And so I don't know what you call that. If you call that DEI, sure. I don't think it's dead. I think what's never going to die is that as humans and as a species, there's a humanity that connects us.
If you didn't go, just listen, folks, go back about 4 or 5 minutes and listen to that again. I think oftentimes it's about, if I was walking down the street and a car crashed right in front of me and there was a person that needed help, I wouldn't think to myself, oh, I don't know, they got a Republican bumper sticker on their car, I better leave them alone. Because most people aren't thinking like that.
You said that earlier. You said you see a lot of it online. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily see a lot of it walking around outside. And, you know, sometimes people will say something to me like, I don't have a seat at the table. And I'll ask the question, what evidence do you have that that's true? What evidence do you have that that's true, right? And I ask myself that a lot, right? Do I not have the seat at the table? Or does that person hate me, right? Like, when that person is flying that flag, what does it mean, right? When that person has that bumper sticker that triggers something in me, what does it mean? What evidence do I have that a story, that bumper sticker means 20 other things about them? What actual evidence do I have? I'll share this with you. I live in a very conservative area in California. My kids play sports. A lot of the people that I interact with are of a different faith, look very different from me, probably vote very different from me, probably have never had a conversation with a Muslim person before. You know, a lot of people make assumptions that I'm Hispanic because they only are used to women of color looking a certain way. So when I talk about being of Indian descent or South Asian, it's like exotic or foreign to them. I could walk into spaces and be fearful and be scared and make a ton of assumptions. But here's what I noticed. Their parents that show up several times a week, bring their kids to sports, they are parents that are scared just like I am about their kids' future. There are parents that are stressed out about getting home and getting dinner on the table, getting their kids' homework done. There are so many more things that I have in common with these people than what I'm going to allow a bumper sticker to make me feel, right? Or what I'm going to allow a flag to make me feel. And I say it, and I'm also going to say, it's not easy for me. I get in my own way. I do let my own biases get in the way, but I'm so much more interested in what makes me the same as you than talking about what makes me different, right? There's so many more things that connect us. And that isn't changing. Like, that's been the same for the whole 26 years that I've been in this career. There's always ways to care about each other and to take care of each other.
Again, I'm joined with Faza Vincent, Executive Director of the CCVA, Council for Certification and Volunteer Administration. And I mentioned earlier, you've been the ED for a little over 5 years, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. But I think too often we can become synonymous with our work and our title. Like, I'm sure this, you know, if you're at Points of Light or something like that, you step into a room, people know you. Oh, I know who that is, you know, Executive Director. But I don't know a little bit more about you. So how do I frame this? Who is Faza Vincent, the person, and who is Faza Vincent, the nonprofit leader?
I think I'm the same in both, you know, as a person, I'm a mom and a wife first and foremost, and then I'm a daughter and I'm a sister after that. All of my titles are relational. What is most important to me, you know, if what is most important to me, and if you were to ask me, like, how would you like people to remember you? I would like people to remember me as a cheerleader, as a support, that I always saw the potential in you. And I always encouraged you to be the best that you can, whether I'm doing that as the ED, whether I'm doing that as a mom, whether I'm doing that as a daughter. I bring that energy and that intention in my life with friends and family, but also in my career as an ED. But that's also just been the thread, you know, throughout my career in volunteer engagement. I just want everyone to win. I want everyone to win.
Someone, my ex-wife, funny enough, Fazley, years ago asked me a question that I never forgot. She asked me the question, do you believe everyone in the world can be rich? And she used to talk about rich, not just in terms of money, but just in terms of lifestyle and things like that. And talking about having work to do, we were in a capitalist society across the globe. And my answer at the time was, no, that's not possible, because I had a limited view on what is a limited view on what's possible when it comes to just being human in this world. A lot of these things are system made. They're man made. They're persons made, mainly man made, as we know. So, stepping outside, or stepping back, and framing it as you just kind of said is just so pivoted, because everyone can win. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I didn't think that. But as time has passed, I know now, yeah, everyone can win, and we can strive to that. That's okay.
Yeah. You know, okay. as a mom, seeing things through the eyes of your kids is really eye-opening, right? I have to constantly pull myself back. My kid will ask a very innocent question. So we're driving down the street and they'll see somebody, let's say turning into a plaza or something like that, right? They're holding a sign that says, I need some food, or do you have extra change, or something like that, right? And I have to stop myself and meet my kids where they're at with the questions that they have, right? So my son will say something like, should we stop and help? Or, you know, someone will say, do you have water? You know, their sign will say, do you have water? And my son will say, we don't have water. Should we offer them something else? And I have to stop myself and I have to remind my kids that that person is human. They are asking for one thing. They're not asking for something else. And the way you can dignify that person is by acknowledging the thing that they're asking. So if they're asking for water and you have water that you want to give, then give water. Don't give them your leftovers or your takeout food from the restaurant that you just went to. Don't assume that they want $5. Don't assume that they want something else. Respect the dignity of that human. And respect what it means for them to be asking for what they want. And I think that we do that. I think thinking about somebody asking for something on the side of the road is different. But I think that we have our own definitions of, like, what is success or what does it mean to be rich? And we might look at other people and think, well, they don't have that, or they don't have what you think is success. So they're less than, or they're other, or they're underprivileged, or they're underprioritized. And we need to check ourselves. What means success and what means richness to us is not necessarily what it means to somebody else. Again, I want everyone to win. And whatever that means to you is what I want to help you do. So if that means it's getting your CVA, if that means it's moving from the coordinator role to the director role to the VP role to the ED role, whatever that means to you, is I want to help you win and I want to help you get there.
You know, I've been sitting here rattling my brain a little bit, Fonzie, because you said something earlier about how around January, February, turn of the new year, you were a little bit scared about what was happening, right? Because you didn't know what was, again, we didn't know what was going on. New administration, new rule, just everything that was really happening on the grand scale. I do want to get a little bit more candid with you in that particular space of not necessarily fear. I don't want to put that word out there, but in terms of what are the things that keep you up at night as an ED? You know, what are the things that are on your mind when it's just you, your family, maybe the kids are in bed, you know, you're having a nice dinner, a glass of wine, whatever the case may be. And you're saying to yourself, I'm nervous about this or I'm nervous about that. When you're just talking to yourself in the room, what are those things that keep you up at night as an ED?
Let me share as in my CCVA role, kind of like what are the things that keep me up versus like as a mom or a wife or a daughter, because I think those are a little bit different. From a professional's perspective, you know, we just congratulated 66 people that got their CVA, but there's a lot of people who didn't get it, right? Or who didn't pass for the first time, the second time, the fifth time, whatever it is. One of the things that keeps me up at night, and I have to remind myself to give myself grace, but also to push people a little bit further, is how we limit ourselves, right? Or how we do not see, let me think of a different way to say this. Mm-hmm. The thing that keeps me up at night is that we don't see how great we are. Right. So I'll have people that email me and say, there's something wrong with the exam. You know, it should be graded this way. If only the questions were asked this way. And what you're telling me is that you're seeing your failure as external to you. It's the exam's fault that you failed. Not that you didn't prepare. Not that it's just 2 hours out of your life that you might have not had the best, you know, 2 hours of taking that exam. Maybe you scheduled the meeting right before the exam. Maybe you scheduled the meeting right after. I had somebody whose grandmother passed away the week before. You know, we limit ourselves and we try to externalize, like, you know, it's the exam's fault that I failed, or it's the way you guys do things that I failed. It's not just, hey, I'm going to try again. Hey, it could be something that I could be doing differently. And this is a very specific example, but when I think about us as a profession, and that's one example in how we limit ourselves, it makes me think about when you don't get the budget that you want, when you don't get the venue that you don't want, when the volunteer doesn't show up, what are you putting on other people and what are you taking responsibility of on your own? And where do you see yourself as being limitless? Because getting the CVA is just one step. It's just one step. What's the next goal you have for yourself, right? What's the next achievement that you have for yourself? What's the next dream that you have for yourself? I'm not Christian, but there's a Bible verse that I heard once that sticks with me. And I repeat it to myself over and over again when I feel like I'm limiting myself. It's something along the lines of, like, eyes have not seen and ears have not heard what God has planned for you. I'm paraphrasing it. I really think once we achieve something, I'll say this in the cheesiest way possible. I have the best husband in the world. Until I met him, I never knew a person like that existed. Okay. That quote I had heard, I literally heard that quote 2 days before I met my husband. Eyes have not seen and ears have not heard that which is God has planned for you. And then I meet this incredible person who I'm like, wow, I could not have dreamed of this type of a person, even not just as my husband, just I could not have dreamed that this type of a human exists. And because I'm always thinking of that potential, eyes have not seen and ears have not heard, I'm looking at it all over. I'm always thinking about that. And I see it in CVAs. I see it in potential CVAs. You have no idea how bright and how amazing you are. You have no idea how brilliant you are. You have no idea. You have one of the most difficult jobs in the world. I'm not saying that there are not other difficult jobs in the world. I'm saying we have one of the most difficult jobs in the world, and we do it amazingly well. What we now need to do is communicate that well, right? Leave the place that doesn't appreciate what we do and find a place where we can do that even better. Stop waiting for the invitation to the table, right? Stop waiting for the excuse to tell the amazing story. That's what keeps me up at night, is that I see the brilliance in people and I see how we limit ourselves. And that's why when I think about that, and when I think about how I want everyone to win, it keeps me up at night. But swim, it wakes me up in the morning too. It wakes me up in the morning too, because I see what the potential is, and I love to see it click for people. I love to see them, like you, take the exam the second time and get it right. And now you have this incredible podcast. This podcast is going to be a blip in your list of achievements 5 years from now, Swim. It's going to be something different that you're going to be achieving. It's limitless. Like I see that when I talk to you, but I see that in a lot of leaders of volunteers. Again, I want us all to win.
I want us all to win. That's a great quote. I love that. It's, oh my gosh, I'm flying. I got to leave some questions on the cutting room floor, but I do want to get you out of here with at least two more, if that's okay. When you reflect on your leadership, well, wait a second, is that, you're good?
I'm good. I'm here.
Always got to check.
I have in my calendar that we're here till 11, so okay. My time. So we're good.
Oh my gosh, President Zant is here on the Nonprofit Insider Podcast. If for whatever reason the podcast started right here, go back to the very beginning. You do not want to miss out on what we've been talking about. And we're definitely going to have to get you on 2026, because I have questions about your board and your team and
sure.
All these things. But I want to stick with you for just a little bit longer here. Because when you reflect on your leadership journey and your time, specifically as the CCVA lead, what do you hope to be remembered for?
When I think about my leadership, what I want to be remembered for, I think we talked about that. I want to be remembered as somebody that always encouraged you, that saw the potential in you, that wanted you to win. I don't want to be seen as a competitor. I want to be seen as a collaborator. I think that's what it is I want to be remembered as that person that was encouraging, that person that maybe saw in you what you didn't see in yourself in that moment. That person that wanted the best for you, right? And that person wanted to see you win. I honestly feel like, Swim, like what keeps me, like you asked me what keeps me up and is the same thing that keeps me, what keeps me up at night is the same thing that gets me out of bed in the morning, is honestly, when I log into LinkedIn and I see like, people's achievements and people's accolades, right? When I log into LinkedIn and I see somebody write a heartbreaking thing, like I was just let go, but then I scroll down to the comments and I see all the words of encouragement, and I see that is that humanity that I was talking about that we see within each other. And that's what drives me in this work. I think it's the basis for how we welcome people into the work that we do, how we make connections, what volunteer engagement should be based on as well. That's really what I want to be remembered for. But honestly, I'm not doing this work because I'm thinking about what I want to be remembered for. I'm just doing it because it's just such a big part of, it's just who I am. It's who I am as an ED. It's who I am as a mom, a wife, a daughter, a sister. I want all the people that I care about, and even the people that I don't know in that way, I want us all to be happy, to be successful, whatever that means to us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we got to ride this train here to one more stop, but before we wrap it up here, because I think I was listening to you. It might've been, I can't remember if it was from on Nicole's podcast from the suggestion box or on Curated Conversations. You told a story about a manager who said that you'd never be a manager because you're too nice.
Yes.
I would not be a proper host if I didn't ask you some advice questions, because we have a lot of people that are listening to this who are, they're program managers, they're coordinators, but they want to be VPs. They want to be executive directors. And, with all the external things, sometimes you get a little luck, you get a break, you get the right people, whatever the case may be. But what is the advice you would give to that type of person, that volunteer manager who's looking to take that next step in their career, even if they are too nice?
Well, shout out to Nicole at from the Suggestion Box and Shaliza Jamal from Curated Conversations. I did. I had a manager who said to me, like, you're not gonna make it. Like, you're not gonna be a manager because you're too nice. Like, you're too friendly. You're too nice. And I mean, what that taught me, Swim, is that there is no one way to do things, right? There isn't. When people say that, what does professional look like, right? What does professional look like? Does your hair have to be a certain way? Do you have to be wearing a certain type of clothing? There is not one way to do things. For somebody that is looking to take the next step, that wants to be in leadership, and here's something that I also have remembered when I say I want everyone to win, there are people that have said to me, I don't want to be in leadership. I don't want that responsibility. I don't like managing people. And then I'll say to them, well, what is it that you do want? What is your definition of success? Let's talk about that. Okay. Not everybody wants to be a leader, but if you are listening and you do want to be a leader and you do want to move into those executive roles, there's a couple pieces of advice that I have for you. Really, all the good leaders that I have had are people who are self-reflective, who know themselves really well. All of the bad leaders that I've had, who have also been good leaders because they've taught me what I don't want to be like, right? So I'm grateful for their leadership in that way, are people who don't know themselves really well, who are trying to please their boss or who are trying to please their leader, or who lead from a place of fear. I think that people who know themselves really well don't lead from a place of fear. They lead from a place of love. They lead from a place of humanity. They're not trying to conquer you. They're trying to take you along the ride with them and make you a better leader along with them. And I honestly think if you want longevity and if you want respect and if you want to be able to go to bed at night and be happy with who you are as a leader, get to know yourself really well. It's okay to be nice. It's okay to be nice. Nice does not mean that you can get steamrolled. Nice does not mean that you have no backbone. Amira Barger, a CVA in our community, has a book that's coming out. We have a free workshop coming up with her in November at CCVA. She has a book coming out called The Price of Nice. And what I love about Amira is that she is one of the kindest, sweetest, most caring, most cheerleading people that I know. But she reframes the idea of nice, and she talks about thinking about nice. Being nice doesn't mean that you don't have nerve, and it doesn't mean that you don't have courage. So if you're thinking about leadership, be authentic, be self-reflective, and live out the values that are important to you.
So many shout outs. This is going to be a good LinkedIn post when I post this on LinkedIn.
Sorry, I'm making you work for those liner notes, aren't I? I'm making you.
Absolutely. Holy smokes. Fazavinzant, Executive Director of the Council for Certification and Volunteer Administration. Thank you so much for hopping on the podcast. Gotta do it here. How can people reach out to you? How can they find you?
Oh, find me on LinkedIn. But before you do that, we all want Swim to win. So like and follow this podcast wherever you are listening to it. Give him feedback, rate it, do all of that. Swim, thank you. Thank you for creating these spaces for us to learn from each other and to connect. I cannot wait to see where you are 5 years from now and what you're doing. I just have so much respect for you, and thank you. Thank you for having me here.
Absolutely. That's another episode in the books, everyone. Thank you for listening on. Be sure to find us on all the socials. Link up with Faiza, follow what she's doing, and check out that job posting, too. I'm going to put that in the show notes as well. We'll see you in the next episode, everyone. Take care.